Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Tyler, are more people going to be talking about a 60-minute draw, classic, one for the ages, world title match, or their disappointment over not having a big surprise at the end?
I mean, I certainly hope that it will be the 60-minute epic time limit draw. You know, one of the I don't be a prisoner of the moment, but definitely a very notable TV match that we've seen in the last 20 years in North America. So hopefully that over the obvious announcement that it was going to be staying in a match in Greensboro next week. I mean, I thought that was already announced. So I was like, what? How is this going to be a big surprise? That was all my, if you're a listener and you thought that, let's just keep that between yourself so I don't have any disrespect for you as a viewer. So if I could be any hotter of a take there. But, yes, no, I think the match should be remembered.
Oh, and I mean, what a match. I mean, I do have a thing for 60-minute draws because I read about them as a kid in the pre-internet, pre-newsletter, wrestling newsstand magazines, and they were written up as legendary, historic, you need to be there. And as a kid, all I wanted was to be in an arena for a 60-minute draw. And, like, it just, to me, that marked a classic world title match. And, you know, WWE largely moved away from it. There had been some disappointing 60-minute draws, some of them with the, you know, most falls wins rule, which, you know, can work or not work. I think there's been some overrated matches like Bret and Owen and Michaels and Bret. And then I thought the Lesnar-Angle 60-minute match on SmackDown was a classic and a masterpiece in a lot of ways. I like this one, I think, better. I just think this was Danielson 10 years in the making, you know, going back to just things. This was an example of what he wanted to do, what he learned from WWE style, what he, like, there's so much you can say about it. I mean, the everything that was done on the match was done for a reason that then paid off later. The first 20 minutes felt like, okay, this is going to be long, but it didn't mean it was going to be like more than 40 minutes, but it was going to be more than 20, but it didn't feel like they were ever stalling. Like, I think a lot of 60-minute draws suffer from the sense that wrestlers are kind of filling until they can get to a certain minute mark where they'll pick up the pace. And this certainly did not have a frenetic pace throughout. But it never felt like, okay, let's get on with it. If you're going to do this, don't do 60 minutes. Like, and then the being on national television, being the first time it's happened in AEW, being Hangman Page's first title defense, being it – Brian freaking Danielson, you know, getting to do what he loves, and on national television, it's just, yeah, I thought it was a classic and a masterpiece and one for the ages. I don't know if it's going to be people's like favorite match, because I think some people want more high spots. They want something different from wrestling, and I get that, but I don't think there was a wasted high spot in this match. It was efficient. It was smart. It was crisp. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I second everything you're saying there, and to even more, you know, reiterate on the just the psychology of the match, start to finish, every body part that was, you know, worked on for the first 20, 25, 30 minutes that came back in the last 8 minutes of the match that felt so important, and I thought commentary was so on point with, you know, Excalibur and Taz really bringing all that information home, and I just felt like, you know, Danielson in that heel role, being able to guide the match the way he did, you know, very much like, you know, you're talking about, you know, with classic, you know, I just thought of Ric Flair in his, you know, 60-minute draws. He report, you know, he likes to say he had every night out there with the, you know, NWA world title. And, you know, it just, it makes me feel like Danielson as a heel works a lot better in this role because he was able to dictate this match. It was just like a wrestling screenplay out there where he had spent so much time putting this match together. Page was his, you know, perfect opposite the way he set this match up. And yeah, I mean, almost every 60-minute time limit draw that I have, you know, had the privilege to see either felt very slow in points or it had to use a Iron Man concept where there were 5, 6, 7 falls, to keep it hot. And this match it was electric start to finish. It didn't feel at any point like it lulled at all for me. And, you know, I think the only negative was the commercials, but you can't really avoid that. And if they would have tipped it off that, you know, State Farm is sponsoring this whole hour, it would have tipped off the 60-minute length of it anyway. So I think in hindsight, the not tipping it off that this is definitely going to happen was a plus. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot tonight, but I thought, I like you, Wade. I'm very stingy with my star ratings. And, I had to watch it another time, but it was probably about as close as a TV match can get to 5 stars for me personally. I don't think it exactly hit that. For me, because again, I'm very stingy, but it was very close to flawless in my opinion.
Yep. All right. Well, I want to bring other people into this conversation. Mm-hmm. So let's do an early introduction here and get to our callers and our emails. We're getting a lot of both. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast and post shows. Yesterday, by the way, on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, our blue feed, both are free. Just search Wade Keller, subscribe to this thread feed and our blue feed. The logos look the same. One says post show, the other says podcast. Our post shows are our live call-in shows that are then available to download afterwards. And the podcast feed are more traditional podcasts with a co-host joining me. Yesterday, it was a long time. PW Torch columnist and contributor, Sean Radican, and we spent more than an hour talking about ROH. And Sean has covered ROH from very early in their existence and has been the longest running reporter covering ROH probably anywhere in terms of that being his specialty and his beat. And so we just went in depth on its history, on its future, on its upside, what its niche needs to be if they do come back. We talked about Final Battle this past weekend, AEW and Impact sending in support videos and emergency talent, WWE not doing so. And we broke down different eras of Ring of Honor and kind of talked about why it became such a star-making company and fed so many of the main event matches that we've seen since the mid-2000s, really, in the Punk and Joe era, and so much more. So if you didn't check that out yet, check that out. We also talked some AEW and WWE on the flagship yesterday, but it was very heavy ROH, a good historical perspective on that prominent company that at least shut down in its current form and hopes to, has penciled in a comeback in April. And we actually led with that. You know, what does that even mean that they're shutting down, but they're telling you at the end of their pay-per-view, oh, we'll be back. So that was kind of weird too. So Sean and I talked about that. So check that out. So that's free. I'm also host of various VIP podcasts with a VIP membership. You can hear my focus on AEW and focus on WWE news updates that run most days, along with The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, and post pay-per-view roundtables, along with my detailed recaps of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. So if you're not watching the shows, but you want to keep up, I run down the show start to finish chronologically and give my analysis of pretty much everything that happens on camera and also announcer commentary. Yes, I don't tune it out. I listen. I think it's an important part of wrestling storytelling, and I relay key points that go on there. So go VIP if you want the full immersive experience of our Torch coverage with the ads and plugs removed from our free shows. pwtorch.com/govip, or you can support us on Patreon and get all those benefits. patreon.com/pwtorchvip. My co-host today, the other voice you hear, is Tyler Sage. He is a VIP podcast host, our AEW Rampage host, post-show host, and that's VIP exclusive, and also the Alt Perspective reporter every Wednesday night covering Dynamite. Tyler, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, great to be here. What a show to be a co-host on, so thank you for having me.
Absolutely, and I had Joel Dunnell was scheduled to co-host today, And he got his booster shot and was just sort of like, you know, feeling the effects. So it was good to have you on, Tyler. I know you're doing a lot with Rampage, so it seems like you're not as in the rotation here on Wednesday nights with me as at one point. But I really appreciate you being available on short notice to fill in, and it's great to have you. You're not the backup choice. It's just, you know, we rotate, we schedule things, and sometimes stuff happens. So it's great to have you here.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm on every week. So, yeah, it's good to get other voices on here. So.
And as I told you off air, I mean, I'm really glad it worked out the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say that. No, I shouldn't say that. Joel, get well soon. We're thinking of you. All right. So the cool part about this show is we have listener interaction. Well, there's a lot of cool things about the show, I hope. But caller interaction is one of them. So we have people on hold, and you can join them. Give us a call if you are live streaming us here at around 10:20 Eastern. The phone number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We're here live 5 to 10 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then the show is downloadable a couple hours later once we get the final edits done and get it up on our main podcast feed. So you can listen two ways, live or on delay. If you want to listen live, go to WadeKellerPostShow.com or click on the link taking you directly to the stream that you'll find on our Twitter feed at PW Torch, posted around the time the show ends, or on our website at the top and bottom of my TV reports. So just click on the Keller TV report on Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, and there's a link there that'll take you right to the live stream. You can also call our phone number and just listen in, which a bunch of you do too. If you want to be on the show, be sure to push 1 on your keypad, though. That will flag you on our switchboard. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on tonight's Dynamite. A lot happened, but the majority of it, literally, the majority of it was the Bryan Danielson challenging Hangman Page for the AEW title. I suspect that'll be a big part of our conversation, but other stuff happened. So we will get to that. Tyler, first, before we get to our first call, tell people how they can follow you on social media.
Yep. You can follow me on Twitter at Ring of Tyler. Just like it sounds, and it was I covered Ring of Honor for the Torch and had a VIP show at one point, so that was kind of in coordination with that. So a tough week for me and Sean as well. So yeah, at Ring of Tyler on Twitter,
and you can follow me at The Wade Keller, and you can follow our brand at PW Torch. Let's get to calls, and we will start with Deke in Michigan. Deke, good to hear from you again. What do you think of Dynamite tonight? What stood out?
Oh, Wade, you had to start with me, huh?
Well, I can put you on hold.
No, that's fine, but I'm going to be completely opposite of you, bro. Wade, you just said it's a classic and all this. What was classic about what happened? Who was made in this match? What's the move? What's the spot? What's the sequence you're never going to forget? Nothing happened. What was classic here?
I don't want to repeat myself, but I'll refer you to the opening. It was mapped out dramatically. The crowd was into it the whole way. It was crisp. It was believable. There were near falls. It went 60. They didn't do the dumb two count before the bell rang, which I'm very glad they stayed away from that cliche. I know it's tempting. They did ring the bell after a big signature move.
They kind of did. They kind of did.
Well, no, they didn't. They didn't do the two count. That's the contrived part. The idea that a clock is counting down, and you would, to use an NHL analogy, be sure you rush the net and get the puck on goal as the clock is counting down. That's a natural thing to do, and that's what the buckshot was. Tyler, I'll throw it to you. Deke, I'm not going to get mad at you, but we're going to be
– either, buddy.
So, well, I'm lying. I'm mad at you. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah. I would add even just that little ending segment to, like, give a zoomed-in approach on why I thought this match was so smart. It tells a story there where – Hangman had already hit the buckshot in the ring, but he felt like he needed to hit it a second time to put away Danielson. He didn't have confidence in himself after that whole match. Because really, I mean, Danielson had won the match. If he would have gone to scoring, I think he would have won, 10-9. And the fact that he had hit that second one and ran out of time and didn't pin him, I think we'll come into the story here and allow us to slow burn it here and get the second one. So that's just, 30 seconds of this match, and I thought, if you want big spots, I think the dead eye on the apron, with a guy like Danielson taking a reverse pile driver and then a tombstone pile driver in the ring, and then Hangman doing the jump onto the table that was real, real stiff, and then, him blading on TV. He's never really bladed, so and then the hard way punch on the open wound. I thought all that was things that I'll remember spot wise, but there's just like, you could take any 5 minutes of this match, and I think I could give you a good example of why it worked for me. So yeah.
And Deke, I did say, you know, this won't be everyone's favorite match because some people want different things out of wrestling. And I always respect that.
Yeah.
I really do. Some people,
for sure.
And I don't mean to, I'm not putting like saying what you like more, but I mean, some people really do want just spectacular. Oh my God. Holy shit. This is awesome. High spots. Some people don't want to sit around for 60 minutes and watch a slow build, you know, or what they see is a unnecessarily slow patience testing build. They want to see more ring entrances and more high spots, get to the finish, move on to the next thing. And like I said, I wouldn't call myself a sucker for 60-minute draws because I have actually been underrated compared to others 60-minute draws. You have to be good if you're going to get 60 minutes. And I thought they earned every minute of it. So, you know, but that's why we have phone lines. I think it's important to hear from other people who look for different things.
Oh, no. And, guys, I respect both of you, but, and I have so much to say to both of what you guys said. And you said, give me 5 minutes and I'll tell you something I like. Give me 5 minutes and I'll tell you something I don't like. Like Hangman getting cut on the outside. I mean, this company has blood every single week. And we have seen since before Dynamite ever even started, the Cody Dustin match where, I mean, it's just a gusher of a match. And they stop the match? Why are you stopping the match? Why are you giving the man a bottle of water? Like, stuff like that just didn't make sense to me. Why are you doing that? What are you doing there?
I think there's standard practice, and I'm not always a fan of it, because I think the goal in a wrestling match is to injure someone, and the idea that you can injure them, but not too bad, or we have to pause the match, is not one of my favorite spots in a match. But I think the idea is, let's make sure that, you know, when someone's bleeding and they're bleeding a lot, let's make sure that this isn't a life and death situation.
Right.
Tyler, did that.
But they have a precedent. Wade, they have a precedent of not doing that, is what I'm saying.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah,
if I didn't make that point clear. Yeah, they have a precedent of not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think usually they wouldn't do it. So, you know, I wouldn't say that it stuck out to me huge, but, you know, I think it's a valid point that you're making there. I would just say that, you know, if you watch boxing or MMA, there's more stoppages in those sports, obviously, because those are, you know, real. But, but you know, like if you watch a big-time UFC fight and someone gets hit, you know, below the belt, they stop the match for up to 5 minutes and it kills the momentum there. So I think for me it helped in this dramatic of a match. It helped a little more than it hurt. It just kind of gave that real sports feel to me. But, you know, I think your points are valid that it's not consistent with how it usually goes as well. So, you know, I can see both ways on that.
On top of that, when he got cut, Brian is in the ring doing jumping jacks and stuff. And I know they're in commercial. But Brian's whole gimmick since he came here was, I am here to be the best. I am here to be the champion. I am here. I don't care about anybody. If the dude's on the outside, and the same thing happened when he went face first through the table, he, like, put a headlock on. He jumped up and put a headlock on Paige when he went through the table. Like, if your whole gimmick is, I'm the best, I'm here to prove I'm the best, why are you not just throwing him back in the ring and pinning him? Like, I don't, again, they have established things. Why are you not throwing him back in the ring and pinning this man? Why are you doing jumping jacks? Why are you putting a headlock on him when he went face first through the table and jumping up to do so? Why are you not jumping up, throwing him in the ring and trying to pin him?
So I don't think what you're saying is in general, something you can never bring up, but I will say this: when you have someone and you're holding them by the arms and it's legal to stomp on their face, why would you ever stop doing that? Why not just stomp them?
I agree with you.
100 times and then you can win. You can say that about pro wrestling matches almost all the time. A good match, a medium, average match, and a great match. It doesn't make sense if you apply 100% fighting principles to it. It's why some people who watch MMA just don't get how anyone can be pulled into a wrestling match. Sometimes I've gone from watching USC to watching pro wrestling, and it does take an adjustment because there is an internal lack of logic to how fights play out in pro wrestling. And there are certain things within the rules of engagement that as pro wrestling fans, you afford, you create this latitude for that. And the story of Daniel Bryan Danielson is he's cocky. He thinks he has paid for where he wants him. Obviously, as a challenger wants to win a world title, you don't want to win by countout. So can you say, oh, he should have just thrown him in the ring and gone for a pin? Sure. I mean, but I just feel like if you apply that to something, you're actually then ignoring 20 other instances that you could apply the same logic. And then at that point, you're not really a wrestling fan anymore. You're just someone going, this is stupid. It doesn't make sense. And I just I don't know that that's how you – I think it would be selective to apply it here. Bryan's cocky. He's a showboat. He's trying to get over as a heel. That's why he's striking poses, doing jumping jacks. And he thinks he's got him. He's confident that he'll be just fine. When Paige crawls in the ring after suffering at ringside for 8 seconds and dealing with the stress of getting counted out, he'll jump on him and he'll have him where he wants him. You know, I mean, it's a couple extra puck passes before driving towards the goal. It doesn't mean he's giving up. Tyler, any thoughts on what Deke said or what I said?
Yeah, no, to build on what you said, Wade, I think if you look at this match in different segments, this is the first, I'd say, you know, first third of the match that happened about the 17, 18-minute mark. And it coincides with Danielson's, what he was doing in the beginning, where he was leaning out of the middle rope and the top rope and, you know, breaking Paige's momentum, getting in his head, treating him like he was less than him. And I think it changed, you know, at the 25-ish minute mark where Paige got his first set of serious offense in and Danielson started taking him serious there. But it tracked with the first version of Danielson that we got here that was just literally like a lion toying with his prey, essentially, was his reaction there. And he was trying to get in the head of Paige and make him look less than. And it was effective. It made Paige look like, you know, a guy who wasn't worthy of being in the ring with him. Then over the end of the match, you know, we'll get to that. But, you know, I just thought it worked well with that character, that micro character that Danielson was portraying in that moment. He would not have done that at the 50th minute mark of this match, but he would have done it in the 20th minute, which, you know, is kind of his character at the moment.
Deke, I'd say this if you were gushing about the match and agreeing with us, or it was just a regular topic. I don't want to keep you too long because I want to respect it's late at night and other people are on hold. So give us another quick point or two, and then we'll, out of respect to the other callers, also move on.
Oh, absolutely, guys. No problem, man. Yeah, if you can't tell, the whole commercial, the blood, the water tending to him definitely took me out. That whole thing took me out. And the other thing, which I haven't mentioned, guys, they just did a time limit draw with this guy in his very first match, which I know is going to be the biggest criticism of this tonight. So I'm not breaking news here by saying it. But they literally just did this. And then after it happened, Taz says, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, this never happens in our business. Like, guys, you literally just did it with the same exact guy. That and again, it foreshadowed to me at New York. I knew there'd be a screwy finish, and I may have called that night. I don't remember. But in New York, I knew it'd be a screwy finish that night because it was the first match. So I'm like, all right, well, this is going to be some kind of schmoz or something. But then they said three times in the first 3 minutes, oh, there's a 30-minute time limit. And I'm like, well, there's going to be a time limit. Same thing happened to me tonight. I knew there'd be a goofy thing. And then by the time we got to the 40-minute mark, I'm like, well, this is going the distance. And that took me out too, guys. The whole thing just kind of – you knew what was going to happen, so I wasn't as invested.
All right, cool. Deke, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. We'll respond to that in a minute here.
Hey, thanks, Wade, and sorry to be negative Nancy out of the get-go. I wish you would have had somebody else first, man.
So,
always love you. Go VIP.
So, Deke,
thanks, guys.
Deke,
appreciate you.
Deke, if you do star ratings, 1 to 5, what is it, like 1, 1.5 for you?
No, I mean, it was worked well. It was worked well, but, I mean.
So, 2?
When you're going 60, you got to have those slow times. So, two and a half. I mean, it wasn't terrible.
All right.
It was just long, man. It was just long.
Gotcha.
And
record.
I knew
thanks,
the finish.
Steve.
You knew the finish.
All right, cool.
Thanks,
Tyler. Yeah, you bet. Absolutely, it's a lot of fun. I didn't know the finish. I was part of me was kind of hoping for 60 because, like I said, I've got a soft spot for that. Even if you don't just instantly get praise for it, I think they are. If you understand the history, if you know the history of this industry, 60 minute draws are special. And it's not often with WWE dominating the industry that they've done that, but it's been done a lot in this industry, and it's considered a big deal. It's a way of telling a story that two people are so equal and so resilient and not giving up, and yet they can't figure out and solve their opponent that they just get to that draw. And so, but I didn't know they would go 60. I thought this might go 47. This might go 36. This could go 55. And AEW should do that. You know, they're a young company. There should be matches that look like they're going to go 60 and they go 46. You know, but you're just not going to do marathon matches on Dynamite, and they don't have that many pay-per-views on a regular basis. So that's my take on that, Tyler's.
Yeah, the finish for me is I'm where you are. You know, I knew when there's only four matches announced that it was definitely going to be a long match. It was the first match, which always kind of dictates that they have as much time as possible. So, yeah, I mean, I would say minute 40 to minute 59, it was pretty much up in the air. And I think they could have gone any direction and it would have worked with the story. You know, if Page would have lost, he would have lost to a guy who, you know, beat him in the ring, if he were to score it again, as I mentioned, and, you know, had a great effort and could build on that. But, you know, kind of starts back at the bottom, and you can tell that story with him on the chase again and get to that point again. And, you know, if Danielson lost at 59, then that would make total sense too, because he would have been pinned if Paige would have gone for the cover there at the end, and it would have made sense. He went long, and, you know, now I'm sure we'll get to this and someone will bring it up, but, you know, Danielson's got two time limit draws to two guys that, you know, are presumably both going to be baby faces once Omega comes back. So that's a pretty interesting story to tell with him on a chase as a heel. So yeah, there's lots to go there, but I think every possibility was open here. And I would say if you asked me in the moment, a 60 minute time limit draw seemed to be the most likely outcome, but you know, watching a lot of Dynamite in pro wrestling, you probably know what 95% of the matches results are going to be. And I was not that strongly convicted on what it was going to be. So I agree overall.
All right, sounds good. If you're joining our live stream, you can call us 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, 347-215-8558. And you can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, up next is Ian in Tennessee. Ian, thank you for calling. What stood out on Dynamite for you?
How are you guys doing today?
Good. We're supposed to have this devastating storm here, and the radar was ominous, and then nothing happened. So I'm sort of happy, but also like I had that adrenaline rush of this is going to be, you know, a wild night, and it was just sort of calm. So that's my evening. But it meant I had power throughout all of Dynamite, and I can host the show, so I'm happy.
That's always good to hear. As
Vince McMahon says, when people ask that, they really aren't looking for an answer. But hopefully you are.
I didn't hate the 60-minute time limit, you know, because I kept thinking, okay, so it was. I didn't know if it was going to go like 30, 45 minutes for me. But, it was definitely like a shocker when it was a 60-minute time limit for me.
I think Tony Khan knows wrestling history. I think he wants to do as he talks about since he was a little kid, you know, he's been planning, he's been booking Dynamite. There's all these ideas he's read about, witnessed, experienced, watched on TV, watched on pay-per-view, watched in person, read about in the Torch. You know, when I saw him backstage at Full Gear, he gave me a big hug and he's like, he's yelling at everybody, this is Wade Keller. I've been reading him since I was a little kid. He has been reading newsletters since he was a little kid. He wants to recreate classic wrestling that isn't put through the filter of what Vince McMahon, or for that matter, Jeff Jarrett, or everybody in Ring of Honor, although ROH, I saw Nigel McGuinness and Bryan Danielson in a 60-minute draw in person, which was great. he wants to do, you know, classic things from wrestling history, and I think this was something he had, you know, a box he needed to check, and I think he'll do it again, you know, when the talent is there and the story is there. Anyway, yeah, go ahead, Ian.
So my question for you guys is, I'm a big Lucha Brothers fan, and so I know they're booking them on Rampage for an 8-man. So who do you guys think should be Lucha Brothers' next challengers at Revolution?
Tyler, what do you say to Ian's question there?
Yeah, I mean, Revolution, so we got to get through Battle of the Belts. So that they still have an opponent for that. Yeah. So that's kind of disconcerting on the level of opponent that's going to be. But, you know, I think there are two options you want to go. If you want to go straight face heel dynamic, you would probably build Men of the Year and Lambert's coming back. So that would make sense if they're involved in this tag match on Friday. That's going on right now as we speak probably. So, you know, if I were booking it, I think if you do, you know, a face-to-face match has worked. We saw with Eddie Kingston and CM Punk. At the last pay-per-view, I would book Santana Ortiz and the Lucha Brothers to have an epic bout between the two. You could probably even extend it a couple matches if you wanted to. But even though they're both faces, I think they're different enough that you could tell that story and really put a compelling match in the ring that we haven't seen yet in AEW. So that's the direction I would go. And, you know, I think Santana Ortiz could take it off of them at this point, too, and it really build those two guys as an act going forward. So that's what I would do.
You could tell the story with Cole and Fish getting the title shot and the Bucks side-eyeing them. If Kyle O'Reilly comes in, you could do Red Dragon as heels against them. You could have a couple members of Team Taz by that point, you know, as go after. I mean, that's a ways off, and I'm not quite ready to pin down my thought on that. But I think they have options. You know, Santana Ortiz, I feel, you know, I'm my vote is even for feuds between. Legacy, I don't know if we can use legacy AEW stars, but people who are on from the beginning, tag teams that are, you know, firmly established, even if you think they haven't gotten everything out of them that you can, there's part of me that's just sort of ready for some really, truly fresh matchups. And so in the tag team division, my leaning would be to something that just doesn't feel like we've seen it before or probably seen it before. And I think a lot of these wrestlers who are around in the first few months, if you put them on pay-per-view, even if they didn't have the full-fledged feud or the classic match you want to see, I think we're at a point where it's like, let's keep things fresh whenever possible. So that's my inclination. Ian, how about you?
He actually read my mind because my number one suggestion was Santana and Ortiz because I actually just recently rewatched them. It was they were LAX and TNA facing Lucha Bros in a Full Metal Mayhem match, which was like a candidate for match of the year, which is probably one of my favorite matches. So I think they could re-get that magic in AEW for a good match.
Very good. What else, Ian?
So your first point was I was actually disappointed that because I think Bray Wyatt no compete clause actually ended on Monday. And I was kind of hoping he would pop up on AEW and either attack the winner if there was a winner for the AEW World Title match and set up something for the future.
Yeah, I mean, when the lights went out, a lot was going through my mind. One is I really wasn't thinking about. You know, the big surprise. I just kind of moved on from thinking about that while watching the show. And I'm like, oh, that's right. You know, they might do something at the end here. And then I'm like, well, how does this fit in with MJF? And really, you know, they gave us about 10 seconds to think about it. And then it was just, you know, Sting and Darby. I'm not even sure I would have done the lights out thing in this instance because, you know, I mean, it's cool that Sting and Darby are there. But on a night where people like you, understandably, are like anticipating a potential Bray Wyatt debut or someone else, and then you do lights out at the very end of the show, you don't want to put anyone in a position to be emotionally let down that, oh, it's just Sting, it's just Darby, it's just CM Punk. Any other week, it works. This week, you almost were setting yourself up to have, you know, three of your biggest stars seem like a letdown or a disappointment. But in a way, you know, if you set the precedent that Winter Is Coming is going to have a major signing every year, I mean, that can kind of paint you in a corner. And the next year, you know, you're like, what's Ryback doing? We can't find anyone else. Like, you don't want to just force it. So I don't know. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I think the, you know, for the fans that were expecting a new signing, it is disappointing. And I think in general, if you're already signed to the company doing a lights out for like really any reason, unless, you know, it's a Malachi Black entrance that, you know, he's coming up it is something that AEW does a lot. Maybe not in recent months, but there was a streak there where they were doing that for a long time. So not a huge negative for me, but when it's expanded upon and we were discussing it, yeah, I can see how that would be disappointing for some fans, which, you know, is unfortunate because I thought it was a very exciting night of wrestling. And if that was a disappointment for you as a fan, I would feel bad that was put in front of you. So, yeah.
Ian, anything else for us?
I actually just listened to your Talk Is Jericho interview you did on the 94 steroid trial, which I thought was like really, really, really well done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed that conversation. That's glad.
I bring up
Chris
Jericho because I was like,
I was going to say, Kristen seemed to know a ton about the trial, which, or like not in the interview, but like he had said, you know, like he's kind of like fascinated by some of the details here. Like he hadn't immersed himself necessarily in it, or at least not in a long time. So it was interesting having him ask questions about something that was such a big part of wrestling history that I covered so closely, and Dave Meltzer too, and to have us on to, you know, inform his listeners on that. You know, it was really cool to reach a different audience with that knowledge and, such a pivotal moment in the course of wrestling history, things could have been. And that was actually Jericho's last question for us is, you know, how would things be different if McMahon had been found guilty? But anyway, go ahead. You brought up Jericho.
Yeah. So I brought up Jericho because I was like, wait, wasn't he supposed to be on Winter's Coming? Then I forgot he was like sick. He had like a lung disease or something. If I recall that.
He got hospitalized. Was he in the UK?
I think he's in the UK for Fozzy tour or whatever, and the doctor said he can't sing for like a week or whatever.
Yeah, and I didn't see if his condition was reported on, so I just haven't reported on it. But I reached out to some friends who said, you know, he was doing fine, after being held overnight, for cautionary reasons, I guess would be the way to put it. I don't know that he, I don't, did he fly back? I actually just haven't tracked him the last few days. I don't know where he is in the world at this point, but I'm sure that had something to do with him not even being part of the show at all. When you do a 60-minute draw, you're not going to have a lot of time for everybody on the show.
Yeah, and I was like, I kept checking my watch, I was like, well, they've been going for like 30, 45, and I think the Taz said, I don't know if you guys heard Justin Roberts, I was like, I didn't hear Justin Roberts say 5 minutes remaining on the match.
I don't think they had him mic'd well, but I think there was a crowd reaction at that point, a little murmur. So I'm pretty sure that I don't think Taz just made it up. I think there was the announcement. They just didn't mic it enough where it was real prominent on TV that I remember. Do you remember, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like when you're at on a roller coaster and you get the instructions on how to be safe in the train when you're about to go off. So it was very muffled. Yeah. But especially with the 1 minute remaining, I thought the commentary team did a good job really hitting it home that this is the last minute and this is this is where we're at. So they pivoted well, I thought, for the lack of sound for the viewing audience.
Yeah.
So my final question is, I don't know if I'm going to be a big fan of the sixth man because I was kind of hoping they would keep MJF and CM Punk like away from each other, like physically, and just keep doing the promos to set up for the match whenever the match happens.
Ian, I have news for you. I think you might get your wish. My hunch is MJF will keep himself separated from CM Punk strategically throughout this, and that'll be part of the buildup. I could be wrong. You know, I mean, he's going to pick his spots. If he has physical interaction with Punk, he's going to pick his spots like a wrestling manager forced in a mixed tag, only taking in when his heavyweight thug wrestler beats down the opponent, and then he's going to take out right away. I don't know if he'll play total chicken shit heel, but he's going to pick his spots if there's any physical contact. That'll be part of the buildup. I think they're going to be smart about it.
Yeah, just if I can get on that too.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Just real quick, I think MJF could even put Wardlow in that spot and kind of continue this slow build of the discontent between Wardlow and that group, and you know, get heel heat for not even being part of the match that he was booked for. So just something to look out for.
Come out with his arm in a cast and
say
he applied the headlock so hard on Dante last week that Dr. Christie needs to rest.
See them doing a steel cage? Because, you know, the whole point of CM Punk's promos have been you keep running away from me. Do you think they do, like, a steel cage or whatever? And keep MJF, locked in the cage with him?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that cage, the tag match is a good way to build up to that even more. I don't know if you start with that. You know, I mean, yeah, do you have a first one-on-one match be a cage? I'm not, as a general rule, in favor of that. I'd rather build to that and have a singles match first. But I also don't want to go through MJF running away and getting counted out on purpose for us to get to a cage match. So, you know, if they have to do that with this few pay-per-views that they run, that's fine. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I like that for a you know, Revolution time frame to keep this going for a number of weeks. And if you had a match in between, yeah, I mean, just the crux of it is not to have it be a DQ finish or have, you know, Sean Spears strike CM Punk with a chair and have him lose that way, make it feel cheap in the moment. So, you know, I can't think of anything super smart to do in that capacity. But, yeah, if there's some sort of reason behind it where you have a match between these two that is relatively short that leads to a cage match, I think that would work pretty well to extend the story out.
Ian, anything else for us?
No, I mean, it was, I don't know if it was better than last year's show, but it was a pretty decent AEW show, which I was really happy with.
Yeah. I mean, the women's match was good. The Wardlow squash was a squash, you know, poor Matt Sydal, you know, crowd chanting one more time and all that. And a good smart main event. You know, we can talk about Dante as the show goes on here. Good and bad in that match. I think we saw a little mix.
I never saw Dante win in the Dynamite ring or whatever. I figured FTW would somehow come in.
Or MJF just beats him clean. I mean, Dante's great in a lot of ways, but, you know, do you want to have him be the guy who ends MJF's streak? You know, I think there's value in that moment, and I'm not sure that Dante needs it and that it would be the best use of it. I talked about that last night on my VIP podcast, focused on AEW, kind of the pros and cons of the finish to either of those matches. And, you know, the con is, you know, if you have MJF win it a third time, you know, you can have a more substantial feud as opposed to just the happenstance of being the final two in a battle royal, be the one who wins it. Dante's got his own thing going with, you know, upstaging Team Taz. He doesn't really need a diamond ring to wear to dinner, as Excalibur explained in The Road to Dynamite. You know, is the benefit of winning a diamond ring instead of a title belt. It's, you know, nice try, Excalibur. I mean, I guess that's true. Anyway, Ian, thanks so much for your call.
No problem. Everybody go VIP.
Thank you. I agree with that sentiment. All right, we'll go to up next, Eric in Charlotte, and then after that, Eric Kroll is on hold, and we'll get his take on things. Eric in Charlotte, thank you for calling. What'd you think of Dynamite?
Yeah, hey, Wade. I really enjoyed it. I got a lot of enjoyment out of that main event, but I also really liked the last match on that. It feels weird calling it the last match, not the main event, but the last match with MJF. Okay. I wanted to ask you two on your opinion. I thought both Bryan Danielson and MJF wrestled a heel style of match and were really effective in sort of playing the heel in those matches. And some thoughts on do you think one of them was who was a better heel in their match? I guess is my question there.
Interesting, Tyler. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. I mean, just like, you know, I think if you look at any other character, you know, heels, villains, et cetera, are all more, you know, multidimensional characters in all media, not just wrestling. So I think there's many faces of a villain. And I think MJF is a certain type of villain and Danielson is a certain type of villain. So I would say that I probably give the lean personally to Danielson because I think he's doing a more nuanced character. And I was very against his turn a few weeks ago, and I think he's really built this character and have it make more sense. And it's been more of an uphill battle where with MJF, he's more of a, you know, traditional bad guy heel within pro wrestling. And I think he does a really good job of that. But I think I like the nuance of the in-ring heel work with Danielson, and he doesn't need to cheat to win. He is better than his opponent, and they know it, but not in the MJF way where he has to cheat and lie and has self-doubt and, you know, deep inside his character, he's a depressed, sad man. And I think Danielson's a proud, you know, not sad man. So I think that's the difference between the two characters. But I think Danielson in the ring, the more nuanced approach, it gets the lean for me, but they're both very good at what they do.
Yeah. They're both very good at what they do. I mean, they're different characters. You know, MJF is a brash 25-year-old predicting Hall of Fame greatness, and Brian Danielson is a guy who has established his track record with, you know, 15-plus years of additional experience, who is, you know, the agitation doesn't come from what have you done, like with MJF, you know, slow down, prove yourself more. It's more, why does he have to be that way when you're so good and we like you so much? And, you know, why do you have to have the attitude that you have? And they execute it kind of in similar ways, but I think just the body language and facial expressions are going to be read, and tactics are going to be read differently because of the backstory of each of the characters and what brings them into these matches. Eric, anything you want to add to that, or you can bring up a different topic?
Different topic.
Yeah.
So, and this is about the little promo that we got with the Super Click and Bobby Fish. So assuming that the Super Click is sort of a cohesive unit, and Bobby Fish is a little bit on the outs, and if the Super Click are roughly equivalent to Shaban, Kendall, and Roman Logan, is Bobby Fish more of a Tom Wobbsbang or more of a Connor Logan?
Good question. I don't think he's Connor, so I guess I'll go more Tom. I think he's more of a Tom. Tyler, do
more
you
of
know?
Tom. Okay.
I'm like halfway through season one currently. I've started watching it, so don't cancel my show, Wade. I'm not caught up. So, but
you get points for starting it, and no spoilers, everybody.
Yeah.
At all. And so, yeah, I'm trying to, as I answer it too, you know, make sure I don't delve Eric into what might make one more like the other based on anything in season three. Eric, what else for?
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
Well,
did
you have a,
yeah.
Without staying spoiler free, did you say who you think?
Well, up until tonight, I would have thought he was more of a Tom because he was more of the attack dog kind of position. And now I'm sort of feeling that he's the guy that's the older guy that's there who thinks he's in the know of what's going on, but is being really left out of what the core group is planning on doing.
And what gets what
and that
keeps
makes him more
me
of
from,
a Connor.
Yeah, what keeps me from saying Connor is Connor's just sort of a flake who wants recognition but actually doesn't. He just is offended that he doesn't get it, even though he just wants to go, you know, I don't know. Again, spoiler-free, just, you know, he wants to do these things, but he's very flighty. And I just think of Bobby Fish as a little more rock solid in terms of who he is and accomplishing things. So
yeah.
But, I don't think we're going to find a perfect analogy between either of them. But that's kind of part of my rationale.
Fair enough. I just really wanted to shoehorn a succession question into tonight's
sure. You succeeded.
Show,
so. That is a shoehorn.
All right.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bring them on. Shoehorn more succession.
All right.
thanks, Eric.
Bye.
You bet. Phenomenal series, if people haven't heard. All right. Let's jump to Eric Kroll from Chicago. Eric, welcome to the show. I appreciate you calling in. Often you're a co-host here, one-time pro wrestling torch columnist and frequent contributor in many ways. Welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler.
Hey.
I have a bunch of points to make, and then I have a question for you guys, all centered on the opening match of tonight's Dynamite. So to let the record reflect, as somebody who was there, that Tony Khan hugged Wade not once but twice after that press conference. Once upon meeting Wade, in which he squealed to somebody, it was like a dude who might have been 60 years old. I don't know if he was like a Khan family associate or whatever. He had a lanyard around his neck. I've been reading Wade since 2012.
We could do a succession reference to who the guy with the lanyard was. I'd say maybe Frank, a Frank character in their existence.
I don't watch
Jerry.
Sorry.
That's ridiculous, Eric. Ridiculous.
And let's just say, Wade, you wouldn't know this because you were Tony Khan was hugging you for so long at hug number one, but the guy looked thoroughly unimpressed. Like, I'm sure he was unimpressed with all of it. I didn't get the sense he was a wrestling guy. I thought, he, you know, I don't know if he's like...
Yeah.
body man or what. But anyway, and then once he
did, by the way, you never said that. Did Tony notice that the guy wasn't impressed? And is that why he kind of exclaimed, "I've been reading him since I was 12"? Like, was he trying to convince the guy?
That's when the guy looked That's when the guy looked unimpressed after he said that. Yeah.
Oh, funny. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm learning more. So, all right.
Yep. Yes, and Todd Martin had his back to me in that scenario. I was behind Todd, but I'm getting the sense Todd might have been a little bit jealous there that he did not get a hug from Tony Khan upon meeting him and upon leaving. So I don't know. I guess I shouldn't cast aspersions on Mr. Martin. I couldn't see, but I just got that
something
vibe.
About
I got that sense.
There's something about knowing of someone when you're 12, you know, and Todd's basically Tony's age. So, you know, there is that.
Yes. Tonight's match, tonight's 60-minute draw, and New Japan Pro Wrestling style title match started slow, almost a little too slow, which was sort of almost a giveaway. But, you know, big near fall spots in the middle, and, I mean, maybe halfway through, maybe in the 30 to 35-minute mark, I wasn't keeping that close to tabs. But, you know, then they had that really long, long spot where I guess it must have been in a picture-in-picture break where Hangman is out there selling the cut. And at first I thought, did he get his bell rung? I mean, are they going to – I was worried they were going to wave this match off because it was so long. Like, it was certainly past the 10 count. And then by the end, I was screaming in my home office here for Paige to cover him after he hit the buckshot lariat. And it didn't happen. I was glad that – I was worried how they were going to end it. It was clear it was going to a draw once, you know, you got past 50 minutes. If they ended it with Daniels having Paige in a submission and the champion gets bailed out by the bell, that would have been really bad psychology. You would want the babyface to, you know, win not win the title that way and have a draw.
Especially with Hangman being new to this level.
Yeah, so it was Hangman, you know, if he'd have had three more seconds, he'd have won the match, presumably. So that kept Paige strong and really elevated him, and the announcers even said they're really elevating the AEW World title tonight. It sets up a, you know, a rematch at the pay-per-view or whatever. Before the match, Danielson said he was going to drag Paige into the deep waters and see what he could do, and Paige hung in there, right? So that was good. Danielson obviously was the architect of the match because Paige doesn't do as much after he hits a move, and Danielson, you know, hits a move and then tries for a submission. I mean, he does that, the stuff between the big moves, you know, the stuff, the space between the notes, I think. Danielson, the MVP of tonight by far, I assume he put it together. I am old enough to remember seeing my first ever, probably as far as I know, maybe the only ever time limit draw world title match on pro wrestling television. And I did some research here while I was on hold. It was the Barry Windham Ric Flair draw. I'm old enough to have seen that. I think you are too, Wade. And
I thought the
Bob Winkler
Henning draw.
Probably before that, or was it after that?
Right around the same time, actually.
Yeah, January 20th, 1987 is when it was a Tuesday night. It was taped in Fayetteville, North Carolina, NWA Worldwide Wrestling. And I remember Dusty Rhodes and Tony Schiavone were on commentary, and I remember this these many years later. Dusty getting so worked up, I think he was probably the booker at the time, he's screaming, get me a cerveza, Tony. And I had no idea what a cerveza was, so I had to ask somebody. And I don't think my dad knew either because he wasn't a big beer drinker. But one more point, and then I'll get to my question. So after that full gear press conference, I think Danielson was up there with Tony Khan, and I'm surprised I got to ask so many questions at that thing, but King Torch really and Jason Powell really cleaned up that night. We really asked a lot of good questions. I was proud of Team Torch and Jason Powell. So I asked Tony Khan, you know, so this new babyface champion, and the first thing you're going to do is put him in against a really, really great, strong babyface in Bryan Danielson. And I feel like a little bit of an idiot now because I probably should have tweaked my question to ask in hindsight, so are you going to turn Danielson heel really quickly? Which is, you know, clearly Mox. They had Mox penciled in for that role, I would imagine. And then Mox was on the shelf. Omega was on the shelf. They did a top heel really quickly. And boy, did they do it. So I guess two questions. One, should Paige have won tonight? Would that have elevated him further, maybe in 45 minutes, or does the 60-minute draw just, you know, create – it does it go down in history and it creates some lore? And then secondarily, when do you do the rematch? Do you do it at Revolution, later, before? And I will shut up now and let you guys talk for a while.
Well, Eric, one thing you didn't get to is how much did you like this match?
Oh, it was fantastic. The one thing I did not get is I clicked over to see if what – I had a podcast appearance earlier tonight for a friend's podcast, and I looked to see what you thought of the match and what Tyler thought of the match,
yeah.
And I saw you gave it 5 stars, and I nearly fell off my chair. Wade is the stingiest guy. I don't think I've seen you give – when was the last time you gave a match 5 stars, Wade?
I don't recall it. Yeah,
I don't recall it.
I mean, I don't often give star ratings to TV matches. In part, and Todd took me to task for this, but I just think TV matches are there to serve a different purpose. And I'm not. I think star ratings are fraught with. I don't even know what I'm saying. There's a lot of problems with them in terms of the subjectivity and all that. But this was, you know, presented as, you know, special, and we saw almost the whole match, even the commercial breaks. I mean, we saw split screen on almost everything, so it didn't feel like, you know, we missed big chunks of the match, as was the case. But I mean, I gave the SmackDown Lesnar Angle 60-minute match 5 stars too, as another example that jumps out. I don't know how many in between those two over the last 15 years I've done, or more than 15. Yeah.
Suffice to say, it's a rare thing. It's
very
not
yeah, yeah.
not an everyday occurrence, not an every year occurrence.
And I don't want to do a long. And I know I interrupted you. Sorry, Eric. And you brought up points that we'll forget and have you repeat now. But I think to me, a star rating includes intangibles, and to me, this had some of those intangibles. And it actually gets to some of what you're saying about the finish. Is one, it's on Dynamite. It's on national TV. It's a landmark moment for AEW Dynamite. It puts it on the map. I think for a generation of fans who have never seen a match go that long, you have this legacy star in Bryan Danielson, who's just super, super, super well-known and highly regarded. And then you have Hangman in his first title defense, his first time being a champion in AEW, and having this kind of pressure on him and the backstory. It's just like, I just think a lot of things came together, and that kind of goes around to your question. I'll throw it to Tyler, see what he remembers about what you asked, Eric. The Hangman proved he can hang with somebody of Danielson's caliber, who went out there and acted cocky about what he was going to do to Hangman. I'm going to take him into the deep end and I'm going to test him. And there was a level of confidence Danielson was showing early that I've got this. This is going to be fine. I'm going to beat this guy. He's tough, but I know I can bring my game. I'll bring my – when I need to bring my A game and win, I'll finish him off. And he couldn't do it, and they told that story. And Danielson had a counter for everything. This is Danielson's style match. We don't know Paige's style match to the degree that we do Danielson. So it was historically significant and potentially star elevating with Hangman. And, you know, and then you just have the idea of Danielson just getting us out of his system. You know, this is what he wanted to do multiple times in the last 10 years. And he got to do it on national TV against a rising star in his first world title defense ever as a heel, which he has a lot more fun being than a babyface. He keeps trying to find excuses to be a heel. And it took, you know, a couple things here to make that happen. So I thought this had a lot of intangibles, including crowd heat, you know, the crowd being invested in it. So to me, it's you know, a star rating isn't in a vacuum. It has to do with the context, placement, and what it means in the journey of the wrestlers involved. And I thought this had those intangibles. Tyler,
yeah,
I'll throw it to you, and then remember to follow up.
Question.
Oh,
yeah,
I interrupted Eric.
Question one was, would you have preferred to see Hangman Page go over? Does that elevate him further, or was it more important to set up a rematch and have the historical moment, water cooler moment on Dynamite tonight?
I like Hangman looking like he was 5 seconds away from winning, 2 seconds to make a cover, 3 second count. But that's a doubt still in his mind. His story, the character of Hangman is all kinds of things get in the way of his confidence, and he's going to still have doubt. His first title defense wasn't a victory. Bryan Danielson's going to rub that in. The next heel's going to rub that in. You know, you kept your title without beating anybody. That's part of getting into the minds, the psyche of poor Hangman. If he lasts 60 minutes with a legend who walked in there, sure, he was going to win, and Now, he proved something, but what did he prove? And that's now up for, as you're bringing up, in a different context, but same thing, like, what did he prove by going 60? He didn't win. That works for Hangman. It doesn't work for every new babyface champion who wins his first world title in his first defense, but I think it works for Paige. And if they're, and part of this is ask again in 4 months, because maybe my answer will be tweaked based on, well, I thought this was going to be important that this happened and they'd play into it, and they didn't. So maybe it would have been better for Hangman to win at the 55-minute mark and just let him beat Danielson. But I think this is good storyline-wise for the Hangman journey that it happened this way. Plus, I just think there's extra points for going 60. Part of that is my history watching wrestling sort of gives bonus points for that because of the historical significance and infrequency of 60-minute matches lately and how important they were, in the 20th century of pro wrestling. So there's some bonus points that makes it more special than even if it was a 55-minute match.
And I'm on team Ty as well, T-I-E. I do think it works better for the character of Hangman, like you laid out, Wade. I think it makes him feel like he's still chasing, even though he is the champion, which is so important for babyface, but specifically this Hangman character too. So, and it's all about the follow through. It's like we're starting the second act. We're halfway through the second act of a movie, and it's hard to give it a full rating. You can kind of see like, hey, this movie's pretty good. It's well written, it's well acted, but I got to see the third act and see how it finishes here. And with AEW, I have faith that the longer story will be told successfully here and the follow through is going to be there. So if I was worried about that, I would prefer to have Paige win, but I have confidence in past booking that they're going to tell the story correctly. And I don't know exactly how they're going to tell that story, which is always an exciting part as a person who watches a lot of wrestling. It's always nice to not exactly know what's coming next. So, yeah, I think the tie for all the intangibles of it being a unique thing that you're not going to see very often, for it being, something that both of them can talk about and come back and have another match and have it be definitive, it just works a lot better than winning at 55 minutes or something like that. So, yeah, definitely team tie.
And as brought up earlier, too, there's the storyline of, Hangman couldn't have just rolled over and draped his arm over Danielson after the first buckshot. Then you can make the counter argument and have a good discussion about it. Well, Danielson, kind of rolled out of the way and made it tougher to even go for it. Like, there's mm-hmm. I want to rewatch the match and just watch Danielson the whole time. I want to rewatch the match and see Hangman the whole time. And was there a spot where Hangman could have gone for a pin? And I'd have to rewatch the match to get all the particulars of the scenarios, but were there moments where Hangman's lack of confidence actually led to him not seizing the moment? Again, I'll use my team of the night NHL analogies, not on a power play, just hitting the slap shot, but making the extra pass. Did Hangman do that? And did that cost him? And is that part of what they build into the story they tell later? And is the inexperience in a match of this caliber that deep, did that lead to also some not errors in judgment where it's objective, but some moments where you look back and Hangman goes, hey, it's a learning experience. There's a couple times there I might have had him, but I judge that I needed to do something extra. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things they can do because of the way the story was told. And if you rewatch this match and only watch Hangman and then rewatch and only watch Bryan Danielson, there's the things they do in between moves and the story that they're telling that I think were deliberate, and this is a match that I think deserves a level of rewatching and scrutiny that most matches simply do not, even big time matches. Eric, back to you.
Yeah. The second question was, I mean, Tony Khan is notoriously rematch allergic, right? He just doesn't like to do them running back matches. I think Moxley got his rematch against Omega. I guess maybe this is a similar situation. Moxley lost the belt at Winter is Coming, number one, in early December last year, and then didn't get his rematch until Revolution, I think, which is when they had that exploding barbed wire cage exploding barbed wire match that didn't explode at the end. A bunch of big shows coming up for AEW is the TBS show where they're changing channels. The Battle of the Belts coming. If that's truly only a 1-hour show, that doesn't leave a lot of time for a rematch. When would you do the rematch? Would you do the rematch? And when would you do it? Would you do it at Revolution? Would you do it before them?
Tyler, I'll throw it to you with this thought. Danielson has a case for a rematch because he hasn't been beat in his title match. You know, his title matches. It's different than when you lose, even under suspect circumstances. So, you know, he can make the case for a rematch, and they can, you know, they can put that on a Dynamite. They can put it on Battle of the Belts. They can save it for Revolution or get Brian Danielson sidetracked and then have him revisit it, you know, a little bit later in 2022. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think the Danielson character, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around why he would not want this match sooner rather than later. So that's the way I would lean that I think it's going. Eric brought up, you know, this was built like a New Japan style main event. And if I was telling the story, I would somehow try and figure a way to make this a New Japan style long-term story where this match comes up in months, not weeks. And you tell that long-term story of these two guys having this epic battle and tell the story there. I just don't know how that works with these two characters, because a guy like Hangman is not going to want to sit on this tie and not avenge it. And same thing with Danielson, the way his heel character is constructed. So I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. Maybe that first TBS show to make sure the ratings there. But if it's any longer than that, I'm not sure how they tell a story at this point to justify it.
Yeah. All right. Eric, any follow-up or anything else?
No, thanks, guys. I will beg off and let you get to some more callers. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Yeah, appreciate it. Good. I'm glad you called in. Thanks, Eric. All right. We'll go next to, Shane in Detroit. Shane, thanks so much for holding. Thanks to everybody who's on hold. Hang tight. We'll get to all of you who are there. What'd you think of Dynamite, Shane?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. I thought the show overall was pretty good. So I was going to bring up three different things, and most of what you brought up regarding the opening match and with the time limit draw, you know, I thought that was like the only thing that maybe I would have liked to see them, you know, do different. But I've listened to your show so far, and you've kind of covered it extensively on your perspective on it. And like I said, I agree with you on the way they did it, though. I personally thought maybe, you know, if Hangman would have won, that would have been great, but also had a hard time thinking they were going to do the time limit draw. So, but that's just kind of my thought on that. The thing that I wanted to talk about most, and I've been wanting to talk about with you for the last several weeks, is with the unfortunate situation with Ring of Honor and, you know, people still leaving WWE, whether it's at their own will or, you know, the unknown circumstances with Jeff. How many more people, honestly, can they fit on their main card before it becomes a little bit too crowded? You know, because there's a lot of top names there and a lot of great people that haven't really had a chance to get their program out, like Malakai. And I'm wondering what they need to do, because the card's getting there and everyone's looking for everybody to show up still.
Yeah, I mean, if I was around for the last, you know, 2 years – and kind of, you know, had a game plan in my head of what the timeline of my push was going to be, and it gets sidetracked, you know, whether it's, you know, Wardlow or Ricky Starks or, I mean, you can rattle off eight names of people who are probably sitting here going, I probably would be in a better spot if it weren't for these signings. Now, you know, rising tide raises all boats, whatever that saying is. You know, you ultimately, I think, you know, you can be patient and it'll pay off. That said, you got Kenny Omega taking time off because he's hurt. You got Chris Jericho, you know, who knows how many big matches he has left. Certainly in a main event level singles, you know, it feels like it's a small number, if any. And you got Moxley with his situation. And frankly, you have Cody, who's damaged right now and not a piece you can just plug in and know that you're going to get what you want and what you program into it out of it. So it shows there's no guarantees, you know. And so I think they can still add people. I mean, Kevin Owens signing with WWE, Fightful reporting that first, a multi-year extension. That's one piece that won't come in. You know, Kyle O'Reilly, Sami Zayn, they're not going to be top people. I've talked on Focus on AEW on the VIP side of things, why I've kind of changed my thought on Wyndham Rotunda, Bray Wyatt coming in, and why I think it'd be a good thing because he's different than the other signings they've had. But I don't think AEW should just, you know, I was skeptical of Tony Nese and even Bobby Fish when they were first signed, because I think a lot of TV time is going to them that could be going to some others who have been around a while and haven't been defined down by WWE. So I get your concern, but that said, when you look at all the people sidelined right now, all for very different reasons, it shows, you know, having a deep bench is good. If this is the Yankees, you know, without a, you know, salary cap, to slow them down from just loading up your starting pitching lineup and the bullpen. And if Tony Khan wants to do that to fight WWE and to try to grow, I get why he would do it, especially if he thinks it's a prudent investment in the long run. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Wade. I think, you know, to keep the baseball analogy going, if you can have five aces in your rotation, that's better than not having five aces in your rotation. And that guy who would have been in your fifth spot, you know, if they go to the bullpen, then it is what it is. I mean, it's kind of not to get economic theory here, but it's kind of the free market in full swing is what you're watching with AEW, along with other things. But, you know, I think it's healthier for, because, you know, I'm trying to imagine, you know, what this company would look like without CM Punk and Danielson and, you know, Cole and in more recent signings, even Ruby Soho. So it wouldn't be bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it would certainly be different. And I'm enjoying the product right now. So selfishly as a viewer, I think that works. And I would like them to retain as much talent as possible. And I think that's an important thing. But I think there's a couple things to look out for. And it's, you know, I think it's inevitable that there's going to be more than 3 hours of TV time for AEW on the Turner network in the near future. I mean, they extended the deal to go to TBS, but I think Tony Khan, as a businessman, is going to add some time slots wherever he can to keep getting more TV dollars. So having a wider roster is good for that. And also, there's going to be a lot of natural turnover as soon as these initial contracts expire. And having fresh faces is good, but you need to kind of replenish the roster a little bit too. So, you know, I think he's been measured with his approach. I think there's a couple the people that Wade mentioned I think I'd agree with are maybe a little – someone I wouldn't sign and save for someone else that is available. But, you know, if 30 people get released from WWE, he's not signing, you know, 25 of them. So so I think it's worked out that the pace that he's added people, and I think there's going to be more content to spread them out as well. So overall, I think it's good. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think Christian would have gotten more of a push if these other signings didn't become available. I think, you know, Malachi Black might have been paced a little quicker. But I don't think there's anything too egregious. I mean, Powerhouse Hobbs is a valuable member of the roster. I don't think you want to overpush him at this stage. I think, in a way, as much as like, oh, it's slowed down the push of some people, that might be good. You know, maybe you don't want to come across as pushing people before they're ready, give them more experience, or before fans are ready for them to be in that spot. And, you know, I don't. Yeah, so I think Orange Cassidy is being used well, and I think pushing him harder than they're pushing him now might have led to some backlash. But we have Hangman Page on top, Sammy Guevara's TNT champion. You know, it's not, and Darby's in a program with Sting and CM Punk. You know, like, I don't think there's egregious, you know, shortchanging of what look like momentum that isn't there that just leaps off the screen. So, you know, I don't think anyone's clamoring for, you know, Sean Spears to get a bigger push, or Peter Avalon, even though his new t-shirt's cool, you know, getting more of a push, or, you know, just, I think it's worked out fine so far. So, but part of that is because of the injuries. So, you know, which sort of proves the point, but it also could have been a problem if not for the injuries. But, you know, because of the injuries, not fortunately, but because they happened, it makes the concern less of a thing. Shane, back to you.
Yeah. So, I appreciate all that. And, you know, Tyler, you were mentioning also, and I know they have Dark and Dark Elevation, but for example, with Rampage, is that where you would think maybe they would, I mean, I don't think they would do a 3-hour show and a 1-hour show, but if they do 2 and 2, and I know Tony doesn't want to necessarily go against SmackDown, even though, you know, he's fine, he beat them when they went against him. Is there another time slot that he could look at for Rampage? Because, you know, they do a 2-hour show at 10 o'clock on a Friday. I mean, you know, I just want to see, you know, these guys get their time on TV and be able to tell these different stories. And Rampage is a great show, as quick as it is.
Do you think that it would be the net positive or negative?
Well, first of all, I'm against expanding hours, yeah. And I've got the sense Tony is, but that temptation is there. I did, you know, a real long interview with Eric Bischoff, 5 hours or so, a dozen years ago. And, you know, he just said the biggest mistake he made was going for the money and expanding Nitro to third hour and Thunder without realizing that it could undercut everything. You know, like it just was unsustainable from a booking creativity standpoint, from a fan standpoint, you know, leaving people wanting more. I think Vince McMahon, and some people have fought me on this over the years, but I think the roster split was a really smart move. Because you're only getting those top guys once a week. He would be leaning on certain people twice a week. You'd burn out. Storylines would go too fast. I mean, Vince McMahon literally consulted me on the roster split idea and called me up and was talking about, you know, I still remember to this day going, do you think if Steve Austin's only on Mondays and Rock's only on Thursdays, or, you know, if they're only on each day of the week, are people going to watch both shows instead of just one? And, like, he was thinking it through on the phone with me, trying to, you know, kind of figure out the strategy because he felt he had – you know, really deep roster, and he knew that having two shows with the same people 2 hours each just isn't sustainable. And Eric didn't do that, and I think he paid a price. So I'm winding my way all the way to saying if Tony does have two-hour shows, I think he almost has to do a roster split. I mean, like, I don't see a big downside in having, you know, just follow that formula and once a year shake things up. He's a sports guy. He'd love to have a draft. I mean, it might seem like a copycat thing, but I just don't think 4 hours of the same wrestlers is sustainable. If anyone could do it, in a way, I think it's Tony, because I think even if Rampage hasn't been a bonanza of ratings growth, I think he's done a good job creating a synergy between the two shows and spreading out the wrestlers. But, yeah, I mean, that's a broader topic than reviewing Dynamite, but that's my take on that. I was going to say, the other thing I was going to say is 6:05 Eastern on Saturdays. That's where you start a two-hour show.
You see, you stole mine, Wade. But
okay.
I just real quick in here, yeah. I think, again, very clear, I am not for any more TV time. I think 3 hours is great. So not me advocating for it. But I think, you know, if you look at year-over-year cable viewership, I mean, we all know the story there. It's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse and worse and worse for people that have cable subscriptions. So, you know, Turner, HBO Max, if they need content, that's kind of where I would see some more premium content. And it would be, you know, it'd be in between Rampage and Dark Elevation and Dark. It'd be something only on streaming on HBO Max that they put title, you know, TNT title matches and have big stars wrestle on it. And it's another hour of content that'll probably be there. And that's not in 6 months. That's probably 2 years, 3 years. But when that becomes more of important part of Turner's business model, I see that being the expansion as opposed to a certain time on cable. But yeah, I agree with your other points there, Wade.
Cool. Shane, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, so the last thing, and I appreciate that, and I almost think brand split would probably be the better route if you were to do it, not that they shouldn't. But the last thing is, you know, with the factions, I know I talked about one of the last times I called, but I'm kind of confused as to the status with Inner Circle and then the Pinnacle, you know, and it seems like there's some long-term story dissension going to happen between MJF and Wardlow. It's just waiting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Pinnacle is like, I mean, when's the last time MJF said Pinnacle on TV? You know, it's kind of weird. You know, FTR is just doing their thing, and Wardlow and MJF have their dissension. Tyler, what do you think of the status of Pinnacle as a faction? It sort of was created to be opposite of Inner Circle, and we're sort of past that, and so it just feels like it's a little bit in limbo, or, you know, just on the back burner, to use a cliche, but it kind of works here.
Yeah, I think it's on the back burner because if you have MJF, you know, if he's going to win the CM Punk feud and then lose to Paige or lose to CM Punk, it gives them something to fall back on, so you don't want to totally disband it. But if they were the way it is now, you know, it kind of stopped as soon as FTR lost the tag titles, if I have my timeline correct. And if they would have MJF dropped them because they're losers, I think that would have been a better story for him. And then he could have kind of rolled with Spears and Wardlow as henchmen and gone into his own thing. So I think it's more of a hedge to give him something to do when he's out of the main event picture, is my guess. But if not, then it's kind of a ball dropped on that whole group, because I think that could have been a compelling story and propelled MJF even a little more, but you know, he's doing fine without that story being told as well. So, but yeah, they seem all but gone, in my opinion.
Cool. Shane, any closing words?
No, that's all. I appreciate all your time tonight, and that's it.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right, this is fun. Yeah, absolutely. It's fun hearing from everybody here. We'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland next. Been on hold this whole time, and we still got Hinton and Sam on deck here. Ryan, go ahead. What do you think of Dynamite tonight? Good to talk to you.
My question's on the world title match. You see WWE trying to copy that one-hour time limit draw for a world title match, because could see maybe someone on the creative seeing that and trying to suggest that to Vince and really pushing for it.
I would see it maybe in NXT before, although this, who I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe some people in NXT are like thinking, hey, Braun Breaker, Tommaso Ciampa, let's do this. Let's see what you can do. Let's have Braun Breaker have a moment. He's sort of the Hangman Page of, you know, but minus a year of NXT right now, you know, the sort of homegrown, never been a main event on a national scale before guy who is on course. So maybe that, I don't know on that WWE main roster who jumps out. I mean, Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre could have a 60-minute draw, but I don't know if that's the story that you want Reigns telling. Doesn't fit his character. Doesn't seem like it's a thing Bobby Lashley or Big E would be their forte or the best way to tell their story. So part of it is just what's the best way to tell the story and to me, like, a 60-minute draw is because it's you know, a wrestler's wrestler match, and you know, Kevin Owens could do it, but again, I'm not sure that's the best way to tell his story. So, and I just think Vince McMahon would be like, you know, mostly against it just on principle, you know, trying to fit what he fits into his shows and the way they do pay-per-view. So I don't know. I don't think WWE will be in a copycat mood after tonight, to be honest. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so either. And, you know, it'd have to be like, yeah, Seth and Kevin Owens or Seth and Finn, something like that on a Monday Night Raw said to make it work. I think, and this is not like me throwing shade, I'm not trying to do that here, but I think they could do something where they act like there might be a long match, and then some things break it up throughout the show, and that's kind of the through line through the show, is that it starts at like 10:49, and it's supposed to be a long match for some sort of reason. So I could see that being kind of a little whatever the opposite of a wink and a nod is to this style match. So I could see something like that coming down the pipe.
I could see them doing a 60-minute match, but breaking away to show other matches while that other match is still going on, because they don't think people would want to watch it. So
yeah.
We've got two rings. We're going to go to another ring while we have short women's matches, and we'll tell you how this other match is going.
Yeah.
I'm very facetious, but it's also, you know, like it rings a little more true than it should as a possibility. Ryan, back to you.
Hey, another question I have on that world title match is, you think Daniel Bryan's getting a lot of flack on taking that reverse pile driver on the apron and some other tombstones, considering his neck problem? You think like his John Laurinaitis and Brie Bella are giving him a rough time, and some of the AEW roster maybe that's close to him?
You know, I mean, at the Full Gear Q&A, it's online too if you want to watch it. I mean, you know, Brian just said, I'm fine. You know, he's like, there's better tests. I'm, you know, in terms of concussions and his physical condition, he just is like, I don't need to be careful. Like, I mean, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I'm not his physician. I didn't think he was excessive in this match. That's one of the things I liked about the match. I mean, I think the big spots they did that can put physical wrestlers get in the ring, and they know there's a risk of injury. They know there's a wear and tear on their body. They know they're going to be probably hurting more in their 50s than an average 50-year-old is hurting from wear and tear in their life. No matter how good they take care of themselves, they sign up for that. The question is, are you making those moves count? And are you doing more than you need to with diminishing returns? And that's the filter I put it through, and I didn't see anything that he did tonight. That now, if you're the mother of his children, if you're his wife, you know, I mean, of course you might have, you know, Renee Paquette's going, my God, I can't watch my husband have these matches anymore. You know, like, I get that, but I wouldn't say that anything tonight jumped out. It's like where I'm like, oh, my God, why is Brian doing that? But part of that is trusting him, which he told us in his book we shouldn't do because he lied about concussions so he could continue wrestling. So, you know, Brian is not the most reliable narrator about pushing through injuries. So I put that out there as a caveat. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say that it's hard to say what is and isn't good for him. You know, I don't have a place to say it, but, yeah, I just think if you are a loved one or you know him, at a certain point, you know, like it might be better for his mental health to do this than his physical health. So it's kind of weighing the options there. And if him being happy is more important than him, you know, being safe might be a good thing. And with wrestling, I mean, I think that the dead eye, the reverse pile driver is, you know, looks dangerous, but you know, that's Adam Page has got that his partner's life in his hands. He trusts him and is what it is. You know, in wrestling, it seems like the bumps that seem easy are the ones that can be the most dangerous. If you look at, you know, Cash Wheeler, I mean, he almost bled out because a random hook from the, yeah, from the turnbuckle got him. So it's just, you know, you never know what's going to happen out there. I mean, Dante Martin took a worse bump tonight, hitting his head after the flip off the top rope there. So it just, you know, they're both consummate pros and you just got to trust and no one's going out there to actually hurt the other one. And it just is what it is. And he's there and he's committed to it. And yeah, it's just something, if you know him, you're friends with him, I would assume it's something you accept and you're just hoping for the best, but yeah.
All right, Ryan, back to you. Anything else?
Okay. Final questions on Ryback. I noticed he was trending on Twitter and that comment MJF made, do you think there's any possibility we might see an appearance by Ryback either next year sometime?
So you're made the butt of a joke, a mid-level, you know, style mocking you because nobody respects you joke. I don't know if it works because I hadn't thought about that. I just thought it was MJF, you know, just picking somebody in WWE who people don't, you know, think's got a big head and got overpushed and is just a muscle head who doesn't have a lot of skill and an impressive win streak. And he pulled the win streak out to compare it to Punk. It just seemed like it fit what he was saying, even if people don't often think of Ryback and Punk in the same sentence, body type wise. The idea of having a mediocre matches against mediocre opponents to create a mediocre win streak, Ryback fits. So I wouldn't think that that's someone they're thinking of bringing in. I don't know Ryback's, you know, physical condition or interest in coming back. If he did come back, you know, what would be the point? Ryback jackhammers or whatever spears MJF, and you're not going to do that. You're not going to sacrifice MJF to Ryback. So you would have to bring Ryback in with the goal of MJF then beating him, you know, with a headlock takeover. And I don't know that Ryback has a price that he'd say yes to that to. Sadly, he should. I might be wrong. So I don't know. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, not to overanalyze where I think MJF was going here, but CM Punk was the one to end Ryback's win streak in WWE. With that, there's like the Hell in a Cell match where Brad Maddox was the ref, not to get too in the weeds here. But if the comparison is that Ryback had an unimpressive win streak like CM Punk is having, then MJF is going to be the CM Punk in that story this time. So it's kind of a, he's the young fan who loved CM Punk and hates what he's become. So he's going to be the one to do what old CM Punk would have done and kind of take that throne.
What you're saying, Tyler, gives it more of a reason to bring Ryback up than, which takes away the notion that that's actually planting a seed for Ryback to come in.
Yeah. Which I hope it is. I mean, I don't know. It could just be like a mid-level joke and you know, I would hope we wouldn't see Ryback. I just don't think it works. And he would just be a joke. And I just don't think it works within what AEW is trying to do, is to come out and like have a Goldberg Ryback, you know, like if there was some little guy and he was playing Ryback, that's kind of what I would do in this scenario or what MJF would do. So hopefully it's what I said and nothing else, but you know, you never know in wrestling. Sometimes you can overanalyze and give credit to a offhanded comment and it doesn't actually mean anything. So
like, exactly. And I think the way to use Ryback is Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks take out Dante. And then Dante, they go, you don't have anybody left to be your partner. We've taken out everyone. And then, you know, Ryback shows up. You get the star pop. You do a match on Rampage or Dynamite or even a pay-per-view or Battle of the Belts. You just do a one-off. Ryback's a special partner. And you just get a little extra out of him. And it adds a little, you know, guest appearance vibe to it. And then, you know, Ryback gets to be part of a winning team, but Dante's the one who scores the win. That kind of thing. You can use somebody like that in that way, but I don't think an MJF one-on-one makes sense. Ryan, anything else for us?
I think if you bring in Brad Mannix as the referee and have MJF as the referee, that might work.
Yeah, I think that's more likely than Brad back at this point, but I think both are bad calls. But
Brad's like, let's do it. Let's do it. I like that I'm being talked about. Go ahead, Ryan. Any closing words or anything else?
No, thanks for taking the call.
Sure, thank you. All right, we'll go next to Sam in Nebraska. Sam, thank you for holding. What's good on Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you had the great hour-long match, which I thought was fantastic. I guess one thing, and I admit I called a little later, so I don't know if you guys touched upon it, but I guess I'm kind of interested in, it appears, Brody King coming in to be with Malakai Black. They've had some really good chemistry when I've seen with them in PWG and stuff. Just curious on some of your thoughts on that.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm going to broaden the question and send it over to Tyler. Who from Ring of Honor intrigues you for AEW to sign? As somebody who covered ROH so thoroughly and consistently recently, we've got the FTR Briscoes thing going on. Jay Lethal's already signed, so that's not really a thing. Who intrigues you, and especially, obviously, Sam brought up Brody King?
Yeah, I mean, just to be quick, I think Brody King works really well. He's a big guy who can move, which is kind of what you need to be in AEW. And he's got a very different look, and he can kind of be a Wardlow-type guy for someone like Malakai and then bring it down to his own, so I think he works really well. I think Jonathan Gresham and Spots would work. He needs to be... He's kind of a star level on the indies that he probably would feel like he needs to be protected a little bit. And I don't know if the general AEW audience even knows who he is. So that's kind of a tough booking situation to do. And I don't know if you're going to build a lot around a guy who is, his height, even though AEW is not a huge deal. But so I'm a huge Jonathan Gresham fan. I think he'd be good in spots there. Elevated Tony Nese level for him. I think the Briscoes work in a one-off. I don't know if Tony Khan wants the headache of them on the roster from past comments that are going to come out eventually. I think Roxy, she's the women's champion. I think she's really good young talent. She's working from MLW now. I think she would be a good person there. And then to round it out, I think Brian Johnson is a great talker that most people haven't seen. He's not the world's greatest wrestler, but he is a fantastic talker who I think could be a good mouthpiece / wrestling manager for somebody. So I would say those would be my top hits off the top of my head. And if I had to add one more, it'd be Shane Taylor. He's got an interesting look as well. And if him and Keith Lee kind of re-team up, I think they could be an interesting tag team within AEW. So some rapid fire answers for you.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's good. Well, we're, over an hour and a half into the show. So rapid fire is good at this point. Sam, anything else?
No, I 100% definitely agree with Shane Taylor. I think he would bring a nice compliment to that. Other than that, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good episode. I thought the stuff with Spears talking during the Wardlow squash, like, number one, it was shot and really bad and kept on cutting bad. I just didn't think that worked at all. And I don't think anyone cares about Sean Spears. So...
Yeah, that's actually worth addressing a little bit, Sam, because we haven't talked about that, and I understand where our focus has been and why, deservedly so. But, Wardlow's out there beating up Matt Sydal, who is not not Jungle Boy or I'm trying to think of like a overly sympathetic figure. I mean, it's Matt Sydal, but he's kind of like laying it on heavy. And then Spears are like, oh, don't overdo it. And he lectures him. And one of those, side-eyeing him, like, who the F are you to tell me what to do? I'm sick of you. Your breath smells. You're ridiculous. Get out of my ring. But I know we're part of the same faction, so I'll tolerate you out of respect for I don't even know. Like, I'm trying to think of what's in his head, that's justifying him coexisting with him. And then he gets the chair shot. So, Tyler, what am I – explain this to me. Like, how do you explain what happened there and what the psychology was? And I agree on the bad camera work. I mean, they cut to Spears with a mic at a time when the match was at a pivotal point, and it was just bad directing and bad timing by Spears.
Yeah, I mean, if if Wardlow does not go face in the very near future and turn on MJF and Sean Spears, I don't understand the psychology of this also.
Even if he does, I'm challenging each other. How does this make sense? Even if that's the plan. I agree it's better if that's true, and it seems that's almost a given it's true. My question is, how does it even work if that's the plan? Like, how do you lay this out and go, oh, yeah, this is a good way to tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a very good way to tell the story. I would say from the perspective of Wardlow, it's this guy that follows you around all day at work, and you hate him, you hate your boss, MJF, and he's in there telling you, you know, it's like when you're a entry-level employee that, you know, people have and we've all had, and you have that boss who is just overbearing, and you're on register and you're not upselling something, and they're just on you for not hitting your numbers for that hour, and you've been standing there for 9 hours without a break, and they're telling you what to do, and you just do one little thing that trying to get under their skin because you just despise that person so much. And, you know, again, I'm probably overanalyzing that, like the Ryback thing, but that's what it feels like to me. It's that guy who he can't stand working with. He's the guy he hates at work so much, and he can't wait to put his 2 week notice and just burn that guy's cubicle down. It's kind of the feel I get with Wardlow. And I think there's better ways to tell this, to not just totally, you know, get this match in a weird way. I mean, it got him cheered, which is weird in this scenario too. So I think something like this in a backstage scenario and just using Wardlow's facial expressions would be better. So I don't want to be out here trying to fully defend it, but that would be my defense if I had to.
All right. Sam, anything else?
Nope, nothing else. Go VIP.
Great, thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. All right, well, go now to Hinton. Looks like a couple other people dropped off. I understand it's getting late. So, Hinton, it looks like you'll be the last caller unless someone wants to jump in while we're talking to you. And then we got some emails to get to before we wrap up, which we'll probably do rapid fire. Hinton, thank you so much for holding so long. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you sound good.
Perfect. So I want to just bring up 2 points about the opening match, and if you have any thoughts on it, fine. But otherwise, I'll just move on to something else. So I thought it worked on two levels. First of all, I thought it was much better than the Brian Danielson Kenny Omega match. That one, I was like, if Dave Meltzer gives this 5 stars, I'm just gonna question that the star system. But this one, I thought probably was deserving of that, and I think. I didn't think that match deserved it. This match, I think, does. But I think it worked on two levels specifically. First was the fact that it was live TV, right? That added to the tension of the match. I think if I caught this match on AEW's YouTube channel or HBO Max, you know, a few years from now, I don't think I'd be quite as excited, even if I didn't know the outcome or you know, see it in the beginning. And the second reason I think it is that it works more for fans who are already wrestling fans instead of newer ones. When I was enjoying it, I'm like, I'm banking on my appreciation of ring psychology that comes from decades of getting to understand what ring psychology actually is and respecting it. I know a very limited number of casual fans will, you know, they'll pop something for like Trent's mom in a minivan. And I don't think they'd watch a match like this without spending a good amount of time on their phones, even though I think it was on the higher end of 60-minute matches. So what do you think of those points, the live TV thing and designed to appeal more to all people who are already wrestling fans?
Tyler, we're getting a little rustling, I think, through your mic. So I don't know if you're rubbing against someone or whatever, but if you can mute or avoid that. The idea of watching it knowing it's going to be 60, how does that change things? Watching a match when you've heard other people rave about it changes things because you go into that mode. Like, you know, I hope people don't watch Succession this way, but like, oh, Wade says it's the best drama series ever. Somehow he likes it more than Breaking Bad or, you know, whatever. Like, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to pick it apart. And like, you know, there's that kind of natural human instinct to be like, it's probably not as good as this person probably overhyped it. So you have that playing into it. And then you have the other aspect of it, which is this just something that people who tune into wrestling, nationally televised cable wrestling show, have the patience to watch and can invest in when, you know, the whole thing that's been instilled in the last 2-3 generations is this isn't real and you're a fool if you buy it as if it's real. We've had people in positions of power multiple times who were like, we're not going to pretend it's real. Everybody knows it's not. Why would we pretend? Which is just, you know, asinine. But that and it didn't make any money having that attitude. And I think I'll go on a rant. AW creates an immersive environment where if you want to buy in, you get to buy in. They're not going to fight it. They're not going to throw any conflicting information or headwind at you. You get to buy in. There's these rules of engagement. There's an internal logic that they follow. Not pristinely and perfectly, but it's there. And so if you want to buy into the storyline of Brian as this mega accomplished guy who still thinks he's in his prime against this guy who's a world champion who he doesn't fully respect, and he's going to pull into the deep end and he's going to beat him in one of a dozen ways. You don't know which one it's going to be. I can pick any of them and it'll work. And I can do jumping jacks and I can still beat him. I'm not just going to beat him. I'm going to take him to the deep end, wear him out and humiliate him and prove that I'm a level better. And maybe in 10 years he can be as good as me. That's compelling. And that's a big part of the story that they told with the body language and the pacing. And then everything they did look good with the exception of, I think, just one, I think what was a dead eye. But almost everything to me watching it once through while also typing up a report, it looked really good. So I think it's a type of match that creates wrestling fans and shows people what wrestling can be. Now it's so hard cause I can transport myself back in time to how excited I was watching, you know, Wyndham Flair or Bachwinkle Henning or reading about them and wanting to experience 60-minute draws. And, you know, it's a different time. It's a different generation. You know, people can't watch baseball anymore without a phone in their hand. Understandably so in some ways, but, so yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't have an answer, as you can hear hint, and I'm talking it through as I go. But my hunch is the audience that AEW is after and the idea of growing wrestling comes from treating this more like a garden that you're growing. You know, like it takes time, it takes sunlight, it takes water, it takes patience, it takes good soil. It takes spacing things out the right way. And I think this is one of the moments in time where you kind of reestablish for your target audience what pro wrestling is. And you contrast it with a lot of what WWE does, which I am less of a critic of than plenty of people who can't even watch the product or hate watch it or watch it and resent the time they spend watching it. I'm not – the things about WWE that I think are even weaknesses of the product don't tend to bother me as much as other people. And I think I have an appreciation for certain things that they do given what their goals are and how they want to accomplish it, which is fortunate given my job is to watch a lot of wrestling. I'm glad I can enjoy a wide array of things and not just pull my hair out. But I think this is AEW taking advantage of being an alternative to WWE, and I think there's value in that. So, Tyler, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think philosophically, I'll take it at that angle. In 2021, almost 2022, I think for anything to gain popularity, grow an audience, and you know, not just plateau or lose interest by any YouTube channel, any TV channel, any movie genre, anything like that, you have to be authentically you or authentically what your brand is or authentically, you know, target for what people are. So I think going for what if you're Tony Khan, if you're AEW, what you love in wrestling and what you think wrestling is, I think going for it and being honest with that and not trying to assume what other people think within reason, obviously, if you love blood every week, sometimes you got to relax on that. But on the whole, I think if you're a wrestling fan and you're making wrestling, I think if you do what in your heart you think is the best thing to do as a wrestling company, that it's going to work out for you. And like you said, Wade, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, the boom of the late 90s took a lot of things. It took a lot to get there. And there was a very bad low period before that, and just like everything in life, everything's cyclical, it ebbs and flows. And being committed to wrestling and committing to it being sports like and being different than what has been portrayed over the last 20 years is only a benefit. And if there was any chance for it to become anywhere near as popular as it was in the heyday, I think this is the way to do it. And now that there are two options that are doing it very differently, I think you get compelling content for people that like it one way or the other, or like it both ways. And I think that is only a positive for the industry as a whole.
Very good. Hinton, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, good points. I don't want to belabor that, because if you were to ask me what I could have done better in this matchup, I really don't have an answer. I think this was the best use of the 60-minute concept that was available to them. I thought maybe Hangman was going to go over at the 59-minute mark, but I'm okay with the draw. I do want to move on to the MJF and Dante Martin match, and I thought this match was good, but this is really one match where I think Dante Martin's flaws and his rookiness, I should say, sort of shined a little bit more. When I hear MJF in shoot interviews, he's always in character, but when he criticizes, you know, when he says, like, yeah, there's some people on the roster whose style I don't like, he just says it in a different tone around lower. I think, like, oh, yeah, I can kind of buy that he doesn't really, you know, like maybe the Bucks or Dante Martin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not personally, but more in terms of the psychology. So Dante's offense looked a bit weak. There are several flips where he just kind of landed very soft right into MJF's arms. I'm like, oh, come on. This is like, I can't believe this. There are some very weak-looking punches. Only one dangerous instant, which is a little too dangerous, where Dante almost killed himself with the Undertaker WrestleMania 25 moment, where he overshot MJF and landed basically face-first outside the ring. And also, MJF, for what it's worth, I think he sometimes feeds a little too early in his moves. He gets into position a little too early sometimes, where I kind of know what's going to happen next. I think I noticed it about him more than I do some other stars. So that's something for him to improve. But what did you think of Dante Martin's overall performance today?
I think his stock dropped. I do. I mean, I think the blank look on his face was sort of endearing until he's headlining Dynamite against MJF. And now it's like, you know, maybe he needs to be a masked wrestler. You know, like, this is the business of telling a story with your facial expressions. And when he did show it, it just felt like sort of binary, going from blank to, ah, and it felt a little put on. And it's just something he's got to work on. You know, it might not – I mean, Bobby Lashley used to have one facial expression, like for most of his career, one facial expression, and he's improved upon that, and it took him to get to, like, age 40 to do that. And so, I mean, I don't want to pick on Dante too much because I'm still a fan of his, but I think in a main event spot against MJF, his stock dropped. Those were some of the worst punches I've ever seen. So when he mounted MJF in the corner, he was punching the turnbuckle pad, and the director had to quickly cut to an opposite view. I mean, you just can't do that. That's just not okay. I don't think he intended to drop his knee on MJF's jaw when he did that backflip. I don't know if he had nerves. I don't know if it's a lack of reps with MJF in the ring, or if part of it is MJF not getting enough reps in the ring. You know, it's part of his character is how, you know, infrequently he wrestles. But maybe he needs to just get out there on dark and just put in more reps and get more ring time in. And yeah, and then the dive over the top rope, and I don't want to sign Blaine there because that could have been MJF, you know, just moving in too close. And that happens, but I wish it happened less often, and I wish wrestlers could figure out how to make sure that happens less often so people aren't overshooting. I mean, it's like Charlotte's signature move is overshooting somebody and just thrusting them with her arm. Stop doing that. If you can't, I mean, my philosophy on this, if you can't make a move look good, don't do it. You know, I don't care how flashy it is. And if people on the other side of the ring who didn't see you missed are chanting, this is awesome, it doesn't change what a million people on TV saw. So I thought Dante's stock dropped. And it might mean he's better off being a tag wrestler, getting hot tags, and let him get more seasoning. He's young and they've invested a lot in him. And I understand why. This was a test. And I don't think, I wouldn't grade him real high on it. And I'm glad he didn't win the Diamond Ring based on what I saw in overall in his performance tonight. But again, it's one match and there's a body of work that leaves me, you know, excited about him being on the roster and somebody to continue to invest in, but maybe a little more carefully pick your opponents and the spot. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah. First, I have a question for you and Todd for the fix tomorrow. Who's got better punches, Dante in this match or Shane McMahon? I'll wait for you to answer that tomorrow on the fix. So
Shane, I'm not waiting. Shane.
Oh man. To be serious and get the real point here. I think you see the boom and bust of Dante in this style of match. Obviously it's some tremendous stuff, and you could take a gif of a couple of these moves and put it on social media and get a lot of hype for that character. But it just didn't work with MJF. And, you know, I obviously have no insight into this, but it seemed to me that there was not a ton of forethought in the build of this match between the two participants, or if there was, there was not great communication. It seemed to me like it was MJF kind of set up the first part, like, hey, let's have an MJF style grapple, we'll switch back and forth, and then it was like, yeah, you get your stuff in for like 8 minutes and then I'll finish the match. And that just kind of, it just felt rough, and you don't see that a ton in major, you know, in WWE and AEW, stuff like that. It felt a little bit more like an indie match that these two would have. So I don't know who to assign blame on that, but it just felt a little rough. And I do think that, you know, as Darius comes back here, hopefully soon, I think him and Dante being a tag team and being a big major tag team and being able to work off each other, I think will help him. And, you know, if Leo Rush is part of that too. So I think all of it is a good sign that Dante's got a lot of potential, but he is definitely not ready for a singles, you know, push in any sort of level if this is a match he's going to have with someone like MJF. So, again, I don't want to assign blame either way, but that's kind of my feel for the match.
I think that's real fair. Hinton, any closing words?
Is it okay if I ask a question about Hook?
Sure. Yeah, of course. It's Tyler's here.
Yeah. So we saw a brief vignette today, and I thought that the selective shots they had of him were good, and I think they painted him better than when I was watching Rampage last week. So I know there's a lot of smarter people than me out there, and there's a better sort of social psychological explanation for Hook's social media hype prior to this match, prior to his debut. I personally couldn't tell the guy apart from early AEW QT Marshall or modern-day Wheeler Muta or Wheeler Yuta, sorry, or Rocky Romero, you know, people who they could easily be a young rookie or a respected veteran or a trainer who sort of fly under the radar and AEW just doesn't do a good job of introducing to us. And then you see how densely packed these AEW shows tend to be and how little TV time Team Taz gets. And when they do get TV time, they're either being chased off by 60-year-old Sting or, you know, being tossed aside by Brian Cage, who hasn't been on TV since his loss to Ricky Starks. So I didn't see anything. And all of a sudden, you know, I heard this hype going on social media, and I see the match, and I think he did impress me. But my question to you guys is, do you think this hype is sustained? Is it a level above what, say, the Fandango hype was in his early days, for example? What are your thoughts on the Hook hype so far?
I think Fandango is a fair example to bring up, not because Hook and Fandango share a lot in common, but the idea in just about any way, other than is it going to burn hot but run out of steam quick because it's a novelty? I don't think so. I think there's something there with Hook. It's unconventional and it's new, but there's bellwether indicators that he has something because of his demeanor, his look. He's good looking, great body, signature hair. I mean, you can just the artists are just rendering that hair. I mean, anybody who has artistic talent wants to draw him. And the arms crossed, gum chewing punk you just want to see get punched in the face, or you want to date him. That dichotomy with the audience right now is manifesting in social media, and the fact that he was discovered through being in the background and not really being featured, and people noticing him and going, who is this and why? What's the deal with him? And he just kind of went from a nepotistic son of a famous wrestler getting TV time for no good reason to, I want to know more about this guy and see more of him, is part of what's going on here. I mean, my opening salvo with Rich Van on the VIP show Everything with Rich and Wade on earlier this week, I think this was Monday, was Rich explained this to me. You know, and we spent like 40 minutes talking about Hook and going in depth on it. Tyler, your take on what I had to say, do you agree? Do you think I'm making points that are different than yours or that you disagree with or that you think I'm ignoring key aspects of this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think everything you're saying there is true from a, you know, we look at it logically, like he's got a lot of intangibles that are desirable in in a pro wrestling character. And, yeah, it's just, you know, I even asked, you know, on the Rampage post show with Hook on it, I had Frank Petiani on, and I asked him, like, Frank, what is the deal with this, right? I just want to ask him point blank, like, Frank's like a about your age weight and a pilot and just like a regular guy in America. And he gave me kind of all the same sort of points that you just gave. And, you know, I think he's different things to different people. And I mean, for me personally, I'll just tell you my journey real quick. I mean, it was the Send Hook thing was a funny meme, and I ran behind it and people enjoyed it. And it kind of built into this thing for me personally. And then that works for me. I think for people like you can see the potential in him as a pro wrestler and his personality, and he's different and he's got a lot there to show. And for the younger audience, you know, he's the first, you know, him and Dante would be like the first Gen Z sort of stars that you would have. And he kind of fits what, you know, I could see Hook being a TikTok star, or, you know, for work, it feels like it comes out of nowhere. I would ask, like, how did Logan and Jake Paul happen? Right. It just feel like it sort of happened. They just had boxing matches with these random celebrities, and all of a sudden now, like, those are the biggest boxing matches that anyone can book in the sport. So I think life is weird sometimes, and sometimes things apply to us culturally and they get viral, not to be, you know, redundant here, but sometimes things are viral and people get behind it, and all of a sudden a meme becomes an attraction and an oddity, and he's good in the ring and he's got all the looks. It just is a thing that happens. And yeah, I mean, I know I'm not giving a ton of good answers here, but I think he means different things to different people and it works. And the fact that we can have this long of a conversation about a guy who wasn't even on the show tonight, he just had a video, it just proves it. I don't know. It just keeps every time I talk about Hook, it just compounds on itself. And I talk more and more about him. It's very interesting. And I think you could write a whole thesis and a dissertation on the Hook character up to this point. I just find it super interesting.
Are you volunteering?
So, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I guess if I get my PhD in Hookology, we'll do that. I'd be a professional, I think Rich called the Hook Hive, right? If I can get a doctor in the Hook Hive, then maybe I will, but, we'll see. Maybe you'll see that on pwtorch.com one day. Who knows?
I think there is a t-shirt idea and I want a PhD in Hookology. I think AW could sell some of those. Hook Hive too. Yep. All right, Hinton. Any follow up on that?
Yeah, I think AW is not the best at monetizing something when it's hot. They just, it's like to hype it on social media, and that's about. So I really hope they capitalize on it and try to make money off it. Now, my very final point is Hikaru Shida, Serena Deeb had a really good match today. It's probably going to fly under the radar. We haven't talked about it until now. evidence of a growing women's division, right?
Yeah, I like the match. It was intense. It felt like a fight. I think everything looked crisp. It had a finish. It had a purpose. It had a backstory. I mean, it had what you want a women's division match to have.
Yeah, and I liked it as well. I think I'd have to go back. I think I had it as the weakest of their three matches, but, you know, by a hair. I think they were all really good. I think, it just felt like a good women's match that didn't need a lot of hype, and it didn't need a lot of – I mean, it had a story behind it, but it had just a well-told story and two really good wrestlers and, yeah, a maturing division. And I look forward to the day where we can have at least one women's match like this every week to talk about and to enjoy. So yeah, good stuff.
I've had some requests for the VIP show that I host, the Focus on AEW, usually solo podcast, to do just a women's special. And I've talked about it and kind of, you know, setting up the tiers and the depth and all that and the depth chart and that kind of thing. And this match, you know, I think did show that, Shida's already established and D, people knew how good she was, but the idea is, can they put it together in AEW and have it not feel like filler? And this felt like it had a backstory and a purpose and an execution that just came together in a way that I think a lot of times AEW's women's division hasn't. Now, I don't want to blow it out of proportion as a monumental thing, but it's just like, if they had more matches like this with backstory, clear characters, a good promo, and intensity, and it looks like a fight, and they don't overstay their welcome, but it's got some length to it. I mean, I don't think the women's division would be, you know, the subject of disappointment that it's been for a lot of people the last 2+ years.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Hinton, thank you. Great talking to you.
Yep, thanks, everyone. Go VIP.
Thank you. Yes. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. I'm stalling while I bring up email here. All right. Tyler, we'll zip through a few emails. I won't get to all of them because, I mean, we've gone 2 hours plus here. But I might get to some later in the week on other formats. We'll see. Jay in Hartford. Good evening, Wade and Tyler. So I'm not a fan of the way the title match was presented. First of all, I turned on Dynamite a little late, only to find that the title match opened the show. Well, can't be mad at them for that, Jay. Can Bryan Danielson have a big-time match in the main event for once? And I'm not referring to his matches with the Dark Order. I mean a big-time match. Also, was I the only one who thought it came across as weird when after that banger of a match, they announced still to come in our main event, MJF versus Dante Martin? I mean, the main event had just ended, but whatever. As for the draw, I didn't like that either. I'm not all that excited to see a rematch, at least not right away, when I just saw them throw everything they had at each other for an hour. Lastly, as much of a Danielson fan as I am, I didn't mind and was actually looking forward to him cleanly putting over Hangman. Adam Page is a star, but putting him over clean tonight could have helped him propel him to that upper echelon. What is it with wrestling companies today that just stop short of doing what it takes to help build the next major superstar? Which reminds me of the so-called main event. Meh. MJF's already over. Have Martin squeeze out a win or win due to shenanigans since you had everyone come out anyway, and you could have somehow gotten to the same ending. MJF didn't need to win this ring for the third time. Okay, done venting. Thanks for reading. I will just say, in short, Tyler, I started with an email in which I think I disagreed with everything he said. And Jay, love you. I know you've been, with us forever. But I've already explained. I'm not going to repeat at length. You know, I think the draw plays into Hangman's character, and this was not the night or the person to have MJF put over. And I think the quality of the match and Dante's facial expressions and punches, I mean, it accentuates that it was my concern going in when I talked about it on Focus on AEW earlier this week, or just yesterday. I'm not sure Dante's the one to win. If he did, you really have to be ready to go with him because MJF losing would have been a big deal. For different reasons, I wasn't concerned with the decisions they made. And I think one thing, I'll pull this as a good point for Jay. They need to start Dynamite with what is clearly the main event and have it be just a regular match that doesn't go 60. And do that on occasion so that it doesn't get predictable. Just make sure they don't fall in that pattern. So I'll pull that out, Jay, as I think your only good point. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, trying to pick things we didn't talk about. I think with the Diamond Ring, I think as soon as MJF loses that, I think that becomes a non-existent part of the show. I mean, that's basically his own personal little FTW-esque title. So I don't have a problem with him winning it here. And, as you've laid out, I think it helps make it important whoever takes it off of him and can kind of build them. And as we saw tonight, I don't think Dante's ready for that jump yet as a singles star. So, and then everything else, we talked about. If you watch the show a lot, you can kind of see that coming, and I don't mind the changing up and having – I much prefer for people to not like that it started the show as opposed to this getting squeezed for time at the very end of the show. So
yeah,
that's just my personal preference as a wrestling fan. So I understand the point, but I guess I'm not as tied to main events being, main events. I like watching good wrestling when I'm fresh as opposed to 4 hours in or something like that. So I think it's a nice change of pace.
Yep. And you got to tune in on time or get, a DVR service where you can start late, but at the beginning. Okay. JB from Detroit says, in hindsight, knowing that the finish of the Hangman Danielson match helps me understand why they opened with that match instead of main eventing with it. The Darby Sting Punk appearance left the crowd going home much happier. The rematch has to take place at Battle of the Belts, correct? Secondly, do you feel the episode felt a little underwhelming to be labeled a special show like Winter is Coming? Hopefully they're just holding their cards until Battle of the Belts to go all out, pun intended. And finally, it seems like Brody King is a lock for the House of Black when Balakai dropped the "you are more than just a king" reference. So I guess the one thing is just, did this live up to Winter is Coming? I mean, I think we're at a point where naming a show is not always going to, like NXT does it less often. And, Halloween Havoc felt like a takeover. They fit a takeover-style show into 2 hours. I think they've been pretty consistent with that when they less often give a special name to their show. Dynamite did it here, and, I don't know. I mean, you do a 60-minute world title match, Hangman's first defense, when you don't give away world title matches very often, and you have the diamond ring, which they're trying to turn into something, and a young star like Dante against a top act like MJF, and then you do an appearance and a hot run-in and a red-hot crowd with Punk and Sting and Darby. I think it lives up to it. But I understand someone saying it doesn't because there wasn't that big surprise. And in some ways, it was a one-match show on paper, with all due respect to the other three. Tyler?
Yeah, I think it certainly lives up to it. I'm, in general, kind of surprised by the response everyone's had. You know, usually I think you and I, Wade, are not the most glowing on anything. And we seem to be on the higher end of at least the comments we've got tonight. So I find that to be interesting as a side. But, yeah, I mean, when I look, as you're reading that, I was trying to think of, you know, the top moments on Dynamite in the last couple of years. And, you know, I think this match tonight, I think the Danielson Omega 60-minute draw, I think Kenny getting the belt off of Moxley, I think of the first episode just being an important thing. And then I had the fourth, as you were talking. But, you know, I think it's the top five Dynamite moments.
Yeah.
They can easily go back to in 10 years. And two of them have been on Winter's Coming shows. So I think it's built as an important show. And so far, they've been very important moments from those shows. So, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, when you talk about this moment, they're not going – the reason that this was a 60-minute draw was not because they didn't want to put Hangman over, or Bryan Danielson didn't want to do a job, or that they're scared of Bryan Danielson doing a job because that'll diminish him. They did it because they thought a 60-minute draw would be special. Now, maybe that's not going to resonate with as high a percentage of people as AEW wants. Maybe our sample size is small, and people who are – emailing and calling are more just going, hey, wait a second, I want to counterpoint the obvious prevailing opinion among the vast majority. And that's, you know, and so I've just put that as a caveat out there. I think people would have a right to be upset if they thought they weren't ready to pull the trigger in Hangman, or that ego that Bryan Danielson has, he lobbied to not do the job. Like, that's not what's happening here. They wanted to deliver something special and historic. When you know the history of 60-minute draws, you know Tony Khan's knowledge of wrestling history, and the idea that Bryan Danielson is the guy who's going to go 60. That's his ring style. Take the guy into the deep end. So, and Hangman Page, as I said, having some insecurities that weren't answered here that others will now point out. I think there's a lot to work with here, and I like it. All right, we'll just end here. Chris from Reading, PA. This Dynamite is why I follow AEW, a five-star classic where they break the past 30-year TV mode and allow a one-hour match to lead off the show and then have a great women's match in the middle of the show while ending the night with a young star and an elevating younger star is why I started following American wrestling again. Whether there were great debuts or not tonight, which I imagine many people thought may happen, I signed up for wrestling that I could buy into and not feel I'd have the rug pulled out from under me. I'm so glad AEW has improved the way it has the past 2 years, and I can't wait to see it continue to grow. So there.
Yeah, you sure that wasn't Tony in Jacksonville instead of Chris?
it sounds like
I'm just kidding,
fan of, yeah, it sounds like a fan of AEW.
Chris is, yeah, Chris is great. That's just a joke. So, off that. So yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but you know, I don't. You know, we're going long here, but if I can twist that into my own question for you, Wade, is just, you know, the growth of the company. You know, do you, as a whole, do you think they've learned from mistakes and are more mature as a company, et cetera? You know, that sort of wide ranging question, I think, is kind of what Chris is getting at in a certain way here.
Yeah, I think AEW's grown and improved. And I think it will continue to grow, but I don't know if it'll continue to grow because of the reasons that Tony Khan today thinks it will continue to grow. And what I mean by that is Tony might think what he has planned is going to grow the company. And I don't know that what he has planned is going to grow the company in the way that he wants. But I think they'll still grow because I think Tony will call an audible or he'll improve where needed. I think some people get on a certain course and it's that or bust. And with Tony, I think he's going to learn as he goes. You know, I think the first 2+ years here is in the pandemic kind of interrupted, you know, some of the flow of things is he's got these ideas that he's built up for, you know, 28 years, you know, like that he, you know, or, you know, 25 years before he started promoting wrestling, that he's been doing format sheets for TV shows since he was a preteen, you know, like, so he's got things he's got to get out of his system, and he's going to learn from, he's going to look at the numbers, he's going to listen to other people, he's dealing with the politics and the ebb and flow and soap opera of the EVPs and his creative team and who he can trust and being new on this and trying to survive through a pandemic and all that. I don't know if Tony knows what it's going to take to grow for sure right now. It's like, you know, an NFL coach or offensive coordinator, you can map out, you know, the first drive, but you can't map out the whole game because you adjust to what the defense is doing. You adjust to who's having a good game and who's not. So I think Tony's going to adjust. And, you know, AEW has improved, but it's not because they had a master plan to improve. I think it comes from reading the room, reading the stats, reading the crowd, and looking at the talent available to you and going from there. And one of the reasons they might grow is because Cody turns into the heel of the year in 2022. You know, but that might not be on the plan right now. So that's my hopefully fresh novel answer compared to other things that I might have said over time in a kind of a more general question.
Yeah, I think it's good. And especially your point there with the EVP. I mean, it's one of the first – I mean, the Young Bucks were on the show tonight. But, you know, it's very EVP-less the last couple of weeks. And I think that is a sign of growth as well, that it's not relying on, you know, people that are there week one versus now, you know.
No Jericho, no Moxley. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were two people that were there basically from day one. You know what I mean? Like, they were – and, I mean, this was a show that – I mean, obviously, we have a 65-minute segment for one match with two people. There's not a lot of room for a lot of other people. I don't want to overplay that point. But, it you know, there was no Christian. There was no Andrade. I mean, there was a lot – no Britt Baker. I mean, it was – they can do that. They have the depth to do it, and that's a credit to AW. They have that many people that they can reliably – bank on fans caring about enough to hold an audience. All right, Tyler, I got to go. My producer will kill me if I don't get the show sent over to get posted tonight. So we will wrap up there. You can send follow-up, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Send questions anytime. We'll figure out a way to work them in one way or the other on various shows, if not on the post show itself. And Tyler, thank you again. How can people follow you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, you can follow me at Ring of Tyler on Twitter, and look for me everywhere on the Torch here.
And who have you got for Friday's post show?
I have Sean Radican, so he's very good that you brought him up. So you can listen to you and Sean earlier, and then me and Sean on Friday night. So
nice. All right, so VIP members, look forward to Tyler and Sean Radican reviewing this Friday's Rampage. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, and we'll talk to you next time.